ADHD is one of the most misunderstood and controversial conditions. Does it really exist? Is it a disorder or illness? Is medication really the best treatment approach? Or was ADHD just created by the pharmaceutical companies to increase revenue and profits? These are just a few of the topics we'll discuss on ADHD Crossfire, where research and science face off against real-life experience. And now, we bring you ADHD Crossfire.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. This is Dr. Rory Stern of ADHDFamilyOnline.com. And in today's episode of ADHD Crossfire, we're going to continue the discussion of ADHD medications and substance abuse for any number of reasons. First and foremost, it's a wide, very broad topic. With questions always unanswered and medication being as controversial as it is, we could probably talk about it for months on end in many different capacities. Another reason we're here is today's guest, Shifra Burke, a dear friend and colleague of mine who I've gotten to know over the last year sharing office space together in private practice, posted on our website a blog at ceruleandassociates.com/blog. And I'll list that website and the resources at ADHDcrossfire.com. She made some really tremendous statements about substance abuse and ADHD and ADHD medications that really floored me. And, you know, as I've gotten to know Shifra on a personal level and a professional level, she has been working with folks who have ADHD, ADHD-like characteristics, for many, many years, long before there was a lot of public talk of ADHD, long before there was media hype about ADHD, and before ADHD or ADD was a household name. Today, Shifra, I believe, you'll catch me if I'm wrong here, but you now work primarily with very successful business owners, many of whom, would meet the diagnosis for ADHD. That's sort of how your specialty has evolved over the years. So, Shifra, I'll say, is that right? But also welcome, and thank you so much for being here with us.
You're welcome, Rory. And yes, that's right. You know, I have that, as you know, kind of a split sort of job, one of which is to be an executive coach and marketing consultant, and the other is as a clinician with a pretty coachy kind of orientation. So in both of those capacities, probably 95% of the people I work with either would fall into the diagnosis if they bothered to, or have that kind of whatever we might call that kind of profile, you know, that zigzag kind of style, head down and go, hard driving type personality, the types I really like to work with. So
I got to tell you, I like that, if they took the time. I don't know if that was the exact words. I'm thinking of so many things right now that we can talk about. But I really like that, because that adds a whole nother layer to this topic of ADHD medication, substance abuse. Is really, there's this component of so many adults, because we used to think it was a childhood disorder, childhood condition. So many adults today are out there in the world functioning, dysfunctioning, who really do meet the criteria. And, you know, as you find it in your work, a lot of them are, you know, high flyer business owners, executives who have one way or another found a way to get it done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's, you know, really strong, visionary, creative, successful types can get it done if they have some scaffolding or structure underneath them, which they may or may not be aware of having.
Another phenomenal term, scaffolding. I was just talking to a professional organizer not too long ago who used that word, and rather than helping people organize, especially parents and families, she was saying, you know, I just try to put the scaffolding in place so that parents can teach their kids to have scaffolding so they can be successful. So another great word. We're very much in tune today. Going back, or, you know, scattered enough as we are, Shifra, coming back a little bit to this component of high potential, high-flying, very successful business type, again, executives, entrepreneurs, business owners who look like they have ADHD, might have ADHD. The fascinating thing here that comes to the substance abuse topic, one thing I believe you mentioned in the blog post, but might be wrong, is really this idea that a lot of people have gotten through life, a lot of adults have managed their ADHD through what we'll call self-medication.
Right, right. I mean, you know, whether that's food or it's another, you know, substance that we're used to thinking about, like alcohol or cocaine or marijuana, it's definitely high correlation between the ADHD, whether diagnosed or not diagnosed, and I never care about that. I may see, by the way, this is sort of a PS, but I may see people in my practice for a while, maybe even forever, and never bring up ADHD, you know, even if I think they have it, because it just doesn't seem like something that's going to work well for them, fit into the whole way they see themselves. So I may just talk about the symptoms, and I may sometimes tease and say, you know, if ever you feel like it, you might look up what this is. But I don't care if somebody actually buys the label or doesn't buy the label, as long as they understand what they're made up of and what their strengths are and how to harness that, as well as understanding how to, whether we call it scaffolding or compensate for the areas of, you know, difficulty. So going backwards, yes, any of those people could be self-medicating. I actually, when I was deciding to write the blog, I called on Teresa Cerulli, our associate, our psychiatrist associate, you know, ADD specialist,
yes,
and said, you know, Teresa, from Dr. Cerulli, from your information, what percentage of people with ADD or ADHD also will deal with substance abuse? Because the numbers are all over the place if you look on the web. And she just gave me this number of 52%. And so she, you know, I know that she is in touch with the latest and greatest in terms of research and statistics. So it's an amazing number that one out of two people, a little over one out of two people who are diagnosed with ADD, and I would say parenthetically whether they're actually diagnosed or not, will likely have to deal with substance abuse sometime during their lifetimes. That's pretty amazing.
It is amazing, especially considering what started down this path of talking about ADHD medication and substance abuse for ADHD Crossfire was an article that came out talking about the rise of abuse and I believe it was also overdose of Ritalin in teenagers. And there were so many different topics. We won't get into all of them. But what really stood out for me when I said, you know, we've got to address this topic is that there's scientific research to suggest that when ADHD is, quote-unquote, properly treated, and according to the research community, that means with medication and some component of behavioral therapy or treatment, that substance abuse is less likely. So when you say, when we say comments like 52%, in some ways that can be very jarring because it flies in the face of what the research says, but then again, I always say as a reference or for context, you can only take research, you know, with a grain of salt.
Right. So I'm trying to understand what you just said, Rory, so, because they don't seem paradoxical to me. If people are going to struggle with substance abuse problems who have an ADHD-type profile, if one out of two, we're saying one out of two are going to struggle with that, I don't know why that's, like how that factors in with what you just said about the Ritalin abuse. I understand that people are abusing Ritalin all over the place. Often those are not people with ADHD.
Which is a strong point. So okay, so how do my two points or bringing this together come together? It go ahead.
Well, the way that I think about it is that oftentimes people with non-ADHD profiles, or whatever, I don't like that word, it sounds so clinical, but, you know, styles, they're just regular folks who don't have ADHD. If they get hold of Ritalin, they get buzzed because it overstimulates their brain. They have just a regular load of, to be clinical for a moment, dopamine receptors. And the ADHD brain doesn't have enough dopamine receptors. So the alcohol or the food or the Adderall or Ritalin boosts those dopamine receptors and brings that person to normal, which is the ADHD type brain, brings that brain to normal. Whereas for the non-ADHD brain, it is an overload, and that's what gets people high.
Absolutely, and I'll throw in my own disclaimer. Not that you've said anything wrong, but just for our audience, so that they understand, that normal makes me cringe. I know
okay,
what you mean by it. I know what you mean by it clinically. And I respect you tremendously. I just want to also say that, you know, normal makes me shudder because then there's this expectation. But you're dead on.
Well,
you're dead
I
on
really
accurate.
Maybe should, because it makes me shudder too, actually. So I'm glad you're bringing that up.
I know
up.
It does.
And so really what I really mean by that is normative.
Yes.
Which is a whole different thing because actually if someone were normative, I'm not that into working with them. You know, the reason I like working with the ADHD type person is because they're creative and interesting and bright and out of the box and inspiring and doing really different important things. And so I wouldn't want them to be vanilla. You know,
right.
I think the vanilla person is great, and we need a lot of that for stability in our world, but they're not the people who drive us forward and who create innovation. And so I don't even want, if we're driving, I don't want people to think that they should be, in quotes, normal or even normative, even though, so.
Yeah, well,
I
no,
appreciate
listen,
what you're saying.
Based on our relationship, knowing you, knowing your work, your philosophies, I knew I could push that envelope with you because I know what you meant. But it's also a very important thing, you know, for the coaching aspect that we do with our clients to remember that we've got to be careful with normal because so many parents struggle with how can I have a normal child. The schools want the kids to be quote-unquote normal. And as you've pointed out, so many people who have this ADHD style tend to have a lot, you know, they bring a lot to the table.
Huge amount
yeah.
to the table.
Huge amount to the table.
Yes.
So to come full circle, and I feel like we could go down a great path with what do folks with ADHD bring to the table, and we'll get there. But if we go back to, this is really a disparity. This is really polar opposites with where I started out with what you call the paradox, or what do they have to do together, is that there are all these different hypey, media frenzy topics about ADHD that are talked about in isolation. And I think what really hit upon it for me with your blog post that initiated this conversation was you had talked about a really, I think, new phenomenon of treating ADHD and substance abuse together. And we'll get to that. But that, to me, bridges everything, Shifra, to bring everything together. Again, this is very scattered, but what I'm trying to say is that we talk about so many different things, the medical world or in the media, very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
But real life, real ADHD is not isolated. It overlaps. It deals in so many different ways. And one of the things we didn't get a chance to bring up yet when it came to these very successful people figuring it out is that, you know, a lot of them self-medicate. We mentioned that. But what are they doing? Some of them smoke an awful lot. Some of them can't function in the morning until they've had their nicotine, which is a stimulant. Same thing with coffee. Some people, you know, most people might drink 2 to 3 cups of coffee. Someone with ADHD or who needs that extra stimulation, or that caffeine, might have a pot, 2 pots throughout the day. All these different things that we need to be aware of, yet we seem to be focusing so much on the clinical, the medical, the right, the wrong, and not the marriage in between of what are people really facing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think what you're saying about treatment is really important. So if somebody goes in and only is addressing the ADHD, whether that's behavior, you know, with behavioral changes or getting coaching and figuring out how to get more organized and having better follow through, all those implementation things, that's great. But you're right. What if simultaneously they're smoking weed or marijuana, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a day every day, or they're doing coke 4 times a week, or they're drinking to the point where it's interfering with work or their family or their health, and they're doing it to calm down, to get more focused, to just, you know, reach a level of feeling okay. In general, they're not doing it to get buzzed or high.
Right.
That's the amazing thing. At the beginning, they are, just like anyone doing substances. But over time, that's not the function of those substances. The function is just to bring them to the point of feeling like they can get done the things in their day that they want and need to get done. The problem is there's kind of a boomerang effect with substances that is not so true for a person with ADHD using the ADHD medications.
Right.
So whether you're for them or not for them, what we can see is if someone is choosing to self-medicate with these other substances we mentioned, or deciding that they're going to try an ADHD prescribed medication, in general, in my experience and in the research, they don't get that terrible boomerang effect of creating another whole set of problems, which food does, alcohol does, cocaine, marijuana, you know, just name it. And getting addicted to something is really, it's hard. It's really hard, and it's hard to stop. It impacts all places generally in a person's life.
It sure does. And again, you know, it brings up so many different implications. And I think a great example is, you know, here we started out just like in episode one talking about these are the issues we'll address. But the minute you get into a conversation about this, real life happens and real issues come up for even for us as professionals trying to figure out what makes sense. Where are we going? What do you mean by that? Because they are so complicated. And yet I think the medical community, some of our colleagues anyway, the media, really tries to, you know, simplify it and dumb it down, if you will, to one aha or one concept that's catchy to people. And I guess that sells papers and it fills media time, the news time, but it doesn't capture real life.
No, it doesn't capture real life. And, you know, we all would love an easy, simple, quick answer, quick solution. I mean, it's the American way. You know?
Absolutely.
And I agree with you that if someone is actually going to make a long-term, really successful life for themselves, long-term change and really successful life for themselves, it's balanced. I mean, because you can have success in one arena, success at work, failure in a whole bunch of other places with your children, with your spouse, you know, with whatever is important to you socially, relationally, you know, all that stuff. But if you're going to have a pretty well-rounded, you know, chunk of success, it really is important to deal with the ADHD and the substance abuse, both. And you can do both. I mean, that's the thing. It's not so hard to do both at not necessarily the same moment in time, but in the same part of, you know, in your life. You can be looking, as a clinician or as a coach, I'm looking with my clients at, okay, so let's talk about, you know, the fact that you smoke three times a day. In a recent case, I said to the person, can we figure out what happens for you if you don't smoke at lunch?
Right,
Let's
right.
just look at, is that something that you can try at least two or three days a week so we get some data?
Exactly. I love that, too, and I've been wanting to say this, so I'm going to make it fit. This is going to be one of those things I force to fit. I think it will, but I'll never forget we were sitting in the office at Cerulean Associates, one of the very few clinical meetings we had as a group, and Dr. Cerulli was talking about her intake. And most people on their intake forms in a medical office ask, you know, do you drink caffeine or do you take this, do you do this? And most people will say a little sometimes. But Dr. Cerulli always pushes, and I think it's on our health history questionnaire, of how much. Because a little to you could be a pot. A little to me is two cups a day.
Oh, absolutely. And right. And the same is true with alcohol, coke, or marijuana.
Absolutely.
Each one of us has a very different baseline for what we think is not much. I have clients come in and say to me, I didn't drink last. I can think of a person recently who said, yeah, I'm doing really great. You're going to be really pleased because I didn't drink last weekend. And I said, so does didn't drink mean that you had two or three or four each night, or didn't drink meant that you had five or six, or did you, what does it mean? And he said, yeah, like maybe five or six each night.
I remember talking about cases like this in the past, that it's remarkable. And I'll say this, we don't laugh to make fun. We laugh because of the differences in how people perceive things.
Yeah, it's a total not making fun for me. It's been a learning experience in these 30 years. Because in the past, you know, when I first began in this, you know, substance abuse world, if someone said I didn't drink, I would assume that meant literally they didn't pick up a drink.
Right.
So I'd be like all psyched. I wouldn't think to ask them for clarification. So, yeah, you're right.
It's amazing. So Shifra, let's go back for a minute here and sort of stir the pot once again and see what the magic eight ball of this conversation has to say. We started out by talking about, you know, substance abuse and ADHD medications. We're talking about them some ways very much together, very much separate. You know, one thing that really, you made a great point about, you know, the people who are abusing Ritalin or the stimulants tend to be people who are not diagnosed.
Right.
So they're getting it from somewhere.
Right.
Which, I mean, people tend to draw their own conclusions that, well, they must be getting it from their friends with ADHD.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I think that's likely true. I mean, the college, if we think about the high school and college age ADHD population, I mean, we're talking about a group who, just as teenagers or young people, don't have their all of the brain fully developed, so their notions about risk, you know, the whole prefrontal cortex doesn't get fully developed until later, so their notions about risk, as I started to say, are different from once you have full brain development, which tells us, you know, you do this, it's X risk, versus when you're young and you think do the same exact thing and it seems like one-tenth X risk. So you're talking about that. You're talking about kids who, in general, may have some impulsivity, who are pretty casual about worries of this sort, and they may get a little buzz off being popular, having something for somebody else. So there are a lot of reasons why someone might be selling their ADD meds.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm chuckling, but I think it's a big problem in a certain way. I do.
Yep.
I think it's a big problem. And at the same time, I don't know the answer. I think one of the problems is that many physicians, many psychiatrists are giving meds to kids without a lot of education and a lot of psychotherapy. So I think that's a huge problem, that these children and young adults are not being followed up well. And I think the self-awareness that one can have with psychotherapy or coaching really is so important alongside the medicine. The medicine alone is just, it's worrisome to me.
Right. Why, and I, rather than keep people dangling, I'll ask, why is it worrisome?
I think it can be maybe necessary but not sufficient, because I think without the emotional intelligence, without the follow-through and the following up on, these young people, and frankly adults too, tend to just, they wander. I mean, this is a wandering group. This is not a stick-to-it kind of group. So not having someone to talk to, not having someone to process how relationships are going, how your emotional world, you know, is, thinking about work, if you're a young person, thinking about career and work, thinking about how to treat your friends, how to not be behaving impulsively when the urge is there, how not to use substances as the way to feel better or fit in or make fewer stupid decisions, which is what they say. That's kind of a quote of my clients.
Yeah.
Then I think the therapy or the coaching is like a home base that you keep coming back to and makes the fundamental difference. Learning, I don't know, I'm just going to go off on this whole other track about...
Go for it.
Well, it's like in other sorts of things. Like, we know that, for example, with OCD, the latest research with obsessive compulsive disorder, which also is high correlation with ADHD, I don't know the exact statistics, but we know that if someone gets medicine exclusively and they get that's it, they're going to do better than without medicine at all. They're going to have fewer compulsions, fewer obsessions. However, if they get some certain kind of cognitive behavioral therapy, either alone or alongside the medicine, they do like 5x better, 5 times better.
Right.
So it's the same here with people with ADHD. And for us to not give them the opportunity to really maximize who they are, what their success path can be, by offering them the steady coaching or the steady psychotherapy or psychoeducation, I just think is it's
naive.
It's naive. There's a good word. I was all the words I could find. I didn't want to say.
Well, I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna say it because
no, naive was good.
That okay,
was
good.
Less
good.
Nauseous word than what I was coming up with.
I mean, you know, I love this. I encourage you to go down this path because this is where the rubber meets the road. There's the science on one side. There's real life on the other, and I hate to say it or make this characterization, but these two communities of science and real life have a really hard time getting along when they play together. And unfortunately or unfortunately, that's where real life happens, is at the crossroads.
Right.
At least it does for me in the way I look at things.
Yeah, I agree. You know, this may tie things together. I don't know how long we have, but this may tie things together. A friend of mine who knows that this is my area of interest, sent me a blog, I think it's a blog, from somebody named Dana Blankenhorn, whom I hadn't heard of, from Smart Planet. And I'm going to read, there's a study that recently came up that was all about dopamine and why stimulants, what they do to ADHD kids versus non-ADHD kids. And it's all about the dopamine. And so it's all about you need to take medicine. So he says funny things like, this isn't funny, but it's interesting. This may also be why ADHD poster boy Robin Williams reported that when he used cocaine, he felt quiet, normal, and sane. Cocaine also stimulates dopamine. This may also be why he later became an alcoholic. Alcohol helps stimulate the natural release of dopamine. So he's talking about the importance, actually, of medicine. He clearly, from reading this blog, he clearly has ADHD, and he says that. As an ADHD kid myself, blah, blah. But he closes with, so while some are going to take this study as offering a simple chemical solution to ADHD, more dopamine, I believe therapy is still highly recommended. The real answer lies in self-awareness, using ADHD's gifts to concentrate and create while being aware of its downsides and treating yourself more gently as a result. So, you know, I mean, it summarized perfectly what I'm trying to say here, which is, you know, don't just do the chemical, because that isn't going to be enough.
But yes, absolutely, and I, you know, I'll sing praises about that, because medication can and does help, but, and it's a huge but, in certain cases for certain people, if it matches your values, if symptoms are severe enough. I could go on and on and on and on and on. But what I really love is that the theme really here, Schiffer, has been turned into there's got to be a fit. And there's not a quick fix. And what you really uncovered when you went down this path before the story was that there are all these different areas of life, all these different skills people need to learn, whether it's for ADHD or not. You know, we need to learn communication skills. We need to learn emotional regulation. We need to learn about emotional intelligence, like you mentioned, which is a brilliant, brilliant concept that we don't hear enough about. So there's more to it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. There's always more to it than just a one-page press release or a 10-minute spot, or actually that's giving a lot of credit to the news, a 2-minute spot on the news where they highlight some juicy headline that makes you sink your teeth in and gets people rallying and picketing.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. I think, Rory, that this is it's complex and needs to be individualized and customized.
Absolutely.
It's also, I don't want to keep saying that it's complex, like it's so complicated you shouldn't, you know, this is going to be really hard to deal with and treat, because in truth, ADHD is extremely treatable. I mean, that's one of the great things. One of the reasons I love working in this field is because there's so much success. And it's a great thing. I get to be around creative, really interesting people who can and often really want to make a difference in their own lives, in their families' lives, and in the world. And so there's a way in which I want to also underscore that this is simple in a certain way. You know, one foot in front of the other, kind of simple. There are things you do.
Absolutely.
And things that help and things that hurt. You do more of the things that help and build strength for you, and you do fewer of the things that are going to come and get you later, like, you know, figuring out your substance abuse so you don't get that boomerang hit in the head of now you've got an addiction to contend with on top of whatever else, or you've got a job loss or a job in jeopardy, or you've got a wife or husband who wants to leave because you're not following through on your promises because you're, you know, doing the coke or at the bar or so high that you're kind of not available.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also think that this last summary that you just talked about with, you know, at the bar, doing this, doing that, is also another, you know, way of being sort of a wake-up call for people just to pay attention to or just to be aware of that, hey, if your partner, your spouse, your child, your father, your parent, whoever, if you notice that they're doing a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that, and I'll let you fill in the blanks, the listener, whoever, and Schiffer, you can as well if you want. I mean, it's just something to wake up and go, here's a piece of data. We don't go crazy and overreact just yet, but we go, wow, this is a really interesting piece of the puzzle. Where does it fit and what does it mean?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think it's really important to get educated because people tend to stay passive, I guess is the word I want. They're passive in the face of substance abuse, other people's substance abuse, and because they don't know what to do, or they're aggressive. You know, they're not assertive. They're not informed. They don't necessarily know how to say and do something that's going to be useful and helpful. So having a meeting or two with an addictions professional or getting online and looking at how do you talk to somebody with a substance abuse problem or reading, if you're into reading books, there are lots of books out there. One phone session, and it could often be a kind of coaching session. I know that it's not typical, but I do this across the country. I have coaching sessions with people around how to talk with their parents or what resources they can use to figure this out for themselves or someone else. So there are lots of possibilities. Don't do nothing. Sorry for the double negative. But, yeah, that's one of the things I'd want to leave your listeners with. There's a lot you can do for yourself or for someone you care about.
Yeah, and I think what I would add to that, I mean, just bravo, but what I would want to add to that is really to get started, because so many people can get stuck. How do I do this? What should I do? Should I do anything? Take some action. Try something. Make a phone call. Reach out. Investigate. Read a book. You know, call Shifra. We'll give you her information momentarily. But just don't get caught up in it. We all get caught up. I mean, forget that comment. But the bottom line is take some action. If you're concerned, ask the questions and put yourself out there and see what you can get.
Yeah, and a lot of it, yes, I mean, I underscore that. And a lot of it is available free. You can get online. If you're the kind of person who'd rather do that, there are all sorts of online support communities for people with their own substance use, abuse, or addiction. There's also lots of support for adult children whose parents have an addiction problem or who, you know, feel affected historically by somebody's addiction. Or there's just a lot online. I just want to say that.
Yeah, and the only thing that I'll say about being online is having my own resources available online, some of my own, some that I look to for information sources, resources. Always know who you're talking to. Don't just believe it because it's online, because anybody with a computer, anyone with a voice can put information up there. So always stick with reputable sites. Always look at, you know, if you're in a forum and you're getting expert advice, is it from the forum moderator? Is it from a medical professional? Is it from somebody who's dealt with substance abuse? Or is it from somebody who just feels like giving people a hard time and in some cases making you feel bad for what you're trying to investigate? I have to, from my heart, say that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're dead on, Shifra.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I agree with you. There's certainly a danger to taking everything online as truth or gospel because we really don't know who the source is a lot of the
absolutely.
Time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Schiffer, I really appreciate you taking some time to give your perspective on this. You just mentioned a phenomenal resource for some work that you do, so people might be curious, how do I get in touch with Schiffer? So go ahead and give us that information, please.
Okay, great. You can call me at 978-446-9600 or you can get online at www.Burke, it's B as in boy, I-R-K-E, consulting.com. That's burkeconsulting.com. Or a really easy way, because my name is so unusual, my first name, although it is pronounced Shifra, as you know, Rory, it's S as in Sam, Z as in zebra, I, F as in Friday, R-A. So if you put that in Google, I actually, my website comes right up. And so it's a really easy way if you forget everything else.
Great. I really appreciate that. Definitely we'll keep that information. Wherever you're listening, you can always get that information underneath this episode at ADHDCrossfire.com, as well as, you know, listening to it again. One thing that I feel like I have to mention, because this would be two episodes now without really hitting the point. So just very briefly, what sparked a lot of this controversy for talking about substance abuse, for bringing the topic up again today, is really the idea that people with ADHD, the people who are using the medication, so many parents are concerned, well, if my kid gets used to being on a stimulant, a methamphetamine or methylphenidate, pardon me, I don't know all the generics or legal terms or scientific terms, but the bottom line is there's a concern that, well, if I need stimulants to get through my life as a kid, it's a gateway drug. That's what started this, and we haven't answered that yet. So I'll put my stamp on this, is that according to the research, when you have ADHD, if you're being treated with medication, the research shows you are less likely to abuse substances, be it the ADHD medication, be it cocaine later in life when you're off the medication. But I believe what we're really looking at here are different issues, different topics, different concerns, and that, yes, people can abuse substances in general. Substance abuse is a very big topic. It's a very real topic. Probably going to have to keep getting more in-depth on this as we go. But I, you know, really want to pull out the issues and let people know where some of this research comes from, where the issues are brought up, and how they can get misconstrued in the media. Any closing thoughts, Shifra?
I would echo what you're saying, Rory, that the research that I have encountered, which is why I really did the blog, was that particular blog, was all of the research that I have looked at said that people who have ADHD and are using Ritalin or any of the other medicines are less likely to have a substance abuse problem going forward, less likely to abuse marijuana, less likely to abuse alcohol or hallucinogens, less likely to abuse stimulants or cocaine. So it looks promising that the concern over abuse of Ritalin is not a worry for the ADHD population.
No, absolutely. And I'll just come full circle and say that I think where it does become an issue, where it is a risk, is when you've got someone who's undiagnosed, untreated, or doesn't want the medication but could really benefit from it, and now they're using, they're relying on tobacco, the nicotine, they're relying on coffee, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, and then all of a sudden it just kind of, you know, it's not doing it anymore. It's not touching it. So now they've got to find some other high, some other buzz that will help them get through the day. And I think that's where it can get out of control. And honestly, that might be a teaser. It's not meant to be. But at that point, we're going to stop. I want to thank my guest, Shifra Burke. Again, thank you so much for being here. And, you know, ADHD Crossfire will be back with this topic and more in the future. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rory.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ADHD Crossfire, the only podcast tackling the controversy between research and science and real-life experience. ADHD Crossfire is made available in part by ADHDFamilyOnline.com, the premier ADHD resource for families living with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADD-ADHD. We'd love to get your feedback on this episode, and you can do that by visiting us on the web at ADHDCrossfire.com.